Welcome to Catholics Across the Aisle, the podcast of the Florida Conference of Catholic Bishops, offering commentary on public policy and civic life. This is Michael Sheedy, Executive Director of the Conference.
Well, the 2020 session is in the books here in Florida. And for a review of the major health policy interests of the conference and how things fared, I'm joined today by Ken Kneatman. Ken is the Associate for Health who joined our staff just, you know, a little bit before the session got underway. He got to spend his first session manning the health desk at the conference. The health desk was established almost 20 years ago, it's hard to believe, to enhance communication between Florida's Catholic health ministries and also to promote their mutual cooperation. And really, this is the main thrust of what we do during the legislative session, but to assist in safeguarding the interests of health ministries and to promote the common good in the policy arena. So, Ken, I'm really pleased to have you on to debrief and to work through the session again. Glad to have you on.
Well, it's great to be here, Michael, and it really was an adventure this session. You know, it truly is. The healthcare segment is, you know, obviously, it's a big piece of Florida's budget. Florida's budget's about $94 billion this year, and almost a third of that is in the healthcare arena. So there's a lot there, and certainly coming in and just needing to learn a lot of new things, it was an exciting season, that's for sure.
We got a lot of really great feedback from a lot of stakeholders in the process on your good work, Ken. And obviously, when you get into healthcare, there's, as you mentioned, the budget, and there are a lot of policy questions as well. Do you want to talk a little bit about one of the main policy areas, particularly maybe starting with guardianship here this session?
Sure. And guardianship was, I'm probably personally attached to it simply because it was really the first bill that I was able to sink my teeth into. And it was really a privilege to be able to support this bill this year. What guardianship is when a person becomes a ward of the state appoints a guardian to look after their best interests if they don't have one appointed as a family member or something like that. And as is sadly the case, there are always a few bad actors who are just willing to take advantage of the system and of their wards. And the bills that came forward this year were really well thought out. They represented good first steps to begin protecting some of our most vulnerable citizens from abuse in the system.
Yeah, there's a lot of outcry, and as you say, Ken, a lot of publicity around some of the bad cases, and it was important work that we helped to get to across the finish line, so that was really good.
Another bill that came up during this last session, we really didn't expect that we would see much action on, and yet by the time session was ending, we certainly did. And that bill had to do with regulating fertility clinics, and specifically around regulating some of the bad behaviors, criminalizing some of the bad behaviors, doctors who occasionally take advantage of their patients in that process. And maybe, Michael, you can speak a little bit more to that, because you really had a lot of input, were very involved in this bill.
Well, obviously, you know, our concern about that process is that it separates the transmission of life from expressions of love, and it opens the door to lots of abuses, which are some of the things that we saw or that we've continued to see in society in this area. And these bills did not go so far as we might have liked them to, but they did try to really clamp down on physicians who were engaging in behaviors such as inseminating eggs with their own sperm or that of someone besides the person that the patient thought was being involved in the process. So really what our biggest role is to help to mitigate the harm of this process. So we would not oppose these bills. We also worked to just make sure that the way the law was written, there was proper respect for the human beings created through that process. So it's not so much to the rest of the bill, but the way that the bill framed up questions about the human embryos, the human beings created through that process. So we felt pretty good about that, as well as mitigating some of the harm in that process. Well, Ken, part of our work is, you know, is having the privilege of representing Catholic health ministries and, you know, gleaning a lot of expertise and perspective from their experience as they try to provide health care, as they inform really a lot of our advocacy. So some of this has involved a little bit of the appropriations process, just some of the things that they've seen with respect to funding. What was some of the stuff that was foremost on your list of things to take care of this session?
Well, certainly part of our role at the conference is really to support the work of Catholic health care in the state and to represent those Catholic health ministries in the legislative process. And from our perspective at the conference, this includes both Catholic hospitals and some other Catholic providers like nursing homes, rehab hospitals, and assisted living facilities. We certainly, along the way, we became aware of some concerns with the long-term providers. And this year, we were really able to work alongside leaders from our Catholic nursing homes, as well as a number of senior care advocacy groups, to pass an inflationary adjustment for the nursing home Medicaid rate. This is actually the first inflationary increase that they've seen in almost a decade. And particularly for Catholic nursing homes, which are among the highest performing and rated facilities in the state, that level of care has gotten a lot more expensive in the last decade. And so this rate increase really represents some welcome relief on that front for those folks. Even though the legislation, while passed by both the House and the Senate, is still pending the governor's signature.
So, Ken, also, I think hospitals were in the news a lot this last session. Speaker Oliva had a lot of ideas about how to improve, I guess, competition. Also, some might say to create some problems with the current infrastructure of our state with respect to hospitals. But what would you like to say just about some highlights around the budget or some other key policy areas that pertain to hospitals in Florida?
Well, if we were to talk about appropriations for just a moment, we talked about a third of Florida's budget being in healthcare, and the hospital funding is in that third. So there's a lot of money appropriated through the legislature. And so tracking that, the way that money gets apportioned, is really important. And, you know, unfortunately this year, our hospitals actually ended up seeing a reduction in some of their base rates. And so we were hoping to maintain those, but just the way the budget process moves sometimes, so their rates got reduced a little bit. One of the bills that we really worked on was opposing a bill that tied nonprofit hospital property tax exemptions to their community benefit.
And not everybody knows what community benefit is. Maybe you would like to say a little bit more about that process and how the good working communities is reflected in reporting in that area.
So there's a couple of pieces in this, Michael. One piece is that because, and we're just going to talk specifically about our Catholic hospitals, because they're nonprofits, they're automatically exempted from paying property taxes in the state of Florida. But nonprofit hospitals also have to provide to the IRS at a federal level their community benefit, which basically is the good that they do for the community. It's the stuff they do that they don't get paid for. It might be free health exams or free services or maintaining a clinic in a community without being compensated for it. So all of these things are community benefit. And what the bill tried to do this year was really to take that community benefit piece and tie it, which is a federal IRS thing, and tie it to the state property tax exemption. And to, in essence, say, you have to provide as much community benefit as the exemption that you get. Now, in theory, it sounds really reasonable. But, of course, the devil is always in the details. And even though our Catholic hospitals provide far greater overall value in community benefit than really the exemption they receive locally on their property taxes, this bill would actually have had a negative financial impact on some of our stakeholders. And so we were working literally right up to the very last day of the session to get the language amended so that our Catholic hospitals wouldn't be negatively impacted by the bill.
So, Ken, there are a few other issues that you got involved in that should merit some conversation before we get too far. Would you like to say a little bit about the environment and Pope Francis's prioritizing those and how that's been playing out here in Florida?
I would. And certainly the environment is a part of the health desk, and it's become more of a priority for the conference as our Holy Father has certainly prioritized environmental issues. And so we've really followed his lead in attending to these things more closely. And really, it's almost a no-brainer in a state like Florida, where our natural resources are really directly tied to the economy and the lives of so many of the people who live here. Protecting the environment is critical to Florida's future as very much a tourist destination. And Governor DeSantis has made it a priority, and he's really set a course for the legislature, which they followed, to invest heavily, really almost $2.5 billion over a four-year period. And so we've paid much more attention to environmental issues and really being attentive to how we can support that the good work that is going on there. In addition to the environmental issues, the health desk is also responsible for a lot of the issues around human sexuality that are not specifically related to abortion. So issues related to gender identity, sexual orientation, are really coming more and more to the forefront. And we recognize everyone's dignity, and we certainly want to see that our state's policies reflect a healthy understanding of what it means to be a human person. Obviously, at times, our anthropology comes into conflict with some views that are maybe more popular in the world. And we really want to be there to propose something that is wholly good and really encompasses the fullness of what it means to be a human person. As St. Paul reminds us, we want to profess the truth in love.
Yeah, Ken, that's a great point. Maybe that's the point at which we should probably wrap up our conversation. Let's always profess the truth in love. Congratulations on a great session. We look forward to continuing to promote the common good, looking after these ministries, particularly as we roll forward. So, Ken, well done. Let's profess the truth in love.
Amen.
It's been a pleasure to speak with Ken Knietman. Now it's time to turn our attention to some of our education activities and a conversation with James Herzog, Associate Director for Education.
Hello, I'm Michael Sheedy, the Executive Director at the Florida Conference of Catholic Bishops. Today, to speak about the 2020 legislative session and our education priorities of the conference, I'm joined by James Herzog, our Associate Director for Education. James, it's a pleasure to have you on today.
Good morning, Michael, and it's a pleasure for me to be here. Thank you.
Well, James, you've had the privilege and the responsibility for many years of representing the 244 schools and the 85,000 students from pre-K through 12th grade here in Florida, representing the largest system of non-public schools in our state. Really, you know, you serve the leaders, you serve the families, the students, all who are about trying to instill a vibrant Catholic identity in the communities that they serve. Maybe you could say a little bit about what that means, how you've seen that play out in your work at the conference.
Yes, the Catholic identity of our schools is a first and foremost consideration of each community. So the school principal, the school pastor, the faculty members, the parents, and everybody will get together and really work hard on that each year. And they try to demonstrate that in very tangible ways. One example would be many of our schools start each day with morning prayer and the Pledge of Allegiance held as a school body. And that way they can get different students involved. And then another big way is by undergoing community service projects and having those regularly at different settings in the community, such as food banks, pregnancy health centers, and nursing homes. Now, when you look at community service, of course, the age-appropriate nature of each setting is an important consideration. So, for example, you would have younger children, like maybe kindergarten and first grade. They might prepare a greeting card for residents of nursing homes. And then children who are a little bit older might actually visit the nursing homes and sing carols to cheer up the residents. And then as you get up into middle school or even high school, you might have settings more out in the community where they provide hands-on service, like organizing the supplies at a pregnancy health center or organizing the donations at a food bank.
Okay, and I know, James, that an important part of our Catholic identity is just the pursuit of excellence, excellence in all things, including academic excellence.
Yes, that's very important too. And our Catholic schools have a 99% graduation rate from high school, and about 86% of our Catholic high school students go on to college. So academic excellence is indeed very important. And we also want to make our schools be the most welcoming and safe learning environments that they can for all children. And it's often boiled down in a simple way, and that way is this. Our Catholic schools are designed to prepare children for heaven, college, and careers.
Very good. Well, I know that excellence is one of the hallmarks of our schools, and being fully Catholic makes you really strive for that excellence that we have. So we're proud of those schools and the vibrant Catholic identity that exists across Florida and the good work that you've been doing in the legislative process, James, to advance common good and the interests of our school populations. Now, I know that in 2019, James, the legislature established the Family Empowerment Scholarship Program. That was a really important event, really, for education here in Florida. And maybe you could say a little bit more about that and how schools in Florida have been participating in that new program.
Yes, I'm glad to. And the Family Empowerment Scholarship, or FES program for short, was really a huge step forward for low-income and working-class families in Florida. So the current school year, 2019-2020, was the first one for the program. And right away, it was very popular with our schools. It served 1,787 students attending Catholic schools from kindergarten to 12th grade, and that represents 2% of our total state enrollment. Now, it was also very popular for other independent and faith-based schools. In fact, it served 18,000 students statewide this school year. In this session, when advocates were looking at the program and coming together to see how it could be improved, they sought to increase the program so even more students could be served.
So that effort was at least in part successful. Maybe you could talk about the expansion, James.
Yes, the legislature this year approved House Bill 7067, and this important bill increases the annual growth rate for the program. Under current law, the program could only grow by 0.25% of the total public school enrollment in Florida. So that's about 7,000 new students who would have been able to come into the program under current law. But the bill changes things and allows for a more robust growth rate of 1% of public school enrollment. So this change will allow more new students to come in, and a total of 46,000 students can be served in the program statewide in the upcoming school year.
Great. Now, James, I know that income is an important factor in determining eligibility for these scholarship programs here in Florida, and a lot of these are tied to federal income guidelines. Where can folks find out more about those, and what should they know if they're wondering if their students or their children might be eligible for the programs?
Yes, that's important to look at the federal income guidelines. And there are different scholarship funding organizations that are approved by the state of Florida. Right now, there are two different ones, Step Up for Students and the AAA Scholarship Foundation. And so those two scholarship organizations have easy-to-understand charts which show the income guidelines. And basically, it works this way. Total family income for the Family Empowerment Scholarship Program must not exceed 300% of the federal income guidelines. So this would translate to a family of four would make just under $80,000 in total household income annually to be able to qualify for the upcoming school year.
And James, this was a great success in this last session expanding this program, but there are a few things that remain to be done that you and others had set out to accomplish this last session. As we look to the coming year, what are some of those that relate to scholarship programs?
Yes, indeed. The expansion was a success, but there are other key goals which did not pass this year for the Family Empowerment Program. One big issue is looking at the gap which currently exists between the actual cost of tuition versus the amount covered by the state scholarships. This year, the Family Empowerment Scholarships range anywhere from $6,775 per student to $7,250. So the legislature determines this amount based upon a percentage of public per child funding. So they have a formula for that. And the formula of the for the per child amount varies by grade level and by county. These funds are appropriated directly from the state of Florida's treasury each year. And this is appropriate and fair as non-public school parents pay property and sales taxes, which support Florida's educational system as a whole. Now, when you look at the public school funding formula, this formula weights funding more heavily for primary grade students, grades 1 through 5, than high school. Non-public schools historically have taken the exact opposite approach, as the true cost to educate high school students is higher than the cost to educate elementary school students in our schools. For this reason, there's a gap in what the state scholarship actually covers and the full cost to educate each child. The gap is made up, though, by enlisting community support. So this is support from alumni who had gone to the school, from the parish or diocesan-based assistance programs, or in some cases, money paid out of pocket by these poor families, or some combination of sources. So this is an issue we've been working on for 2 straight years, and we hope the legislature will revisit it soon.
Now, James, you know, our Catholic schools really try to live the gospel. They try to put church teaching into practice. And there are some key elements of church teaching that really come into play when we get into the policy realm around education. Would you like to just offer a bit more about that, please?
Yes, that's really important to look at. And for decades, the Catholic Church has issued very consistent teaching that parents are the primary educators of the children. So in other words, parents know their children best, the unique gifts and abilities of each child, and the unique academic needs that the child may have. So parents are best positioned to determine the most suitable education options for their children. And scholarship programs like the FES or Family Empowerment Program are considered parental empowerment programs because they really allow parents to call the shots for their children's education. These programs truly offer a lifeline of hope and a lifeline of opportunity for some of Florida's most vulnerable populations, such as economically disadvantaged families or those who have children with special needs or disabilities.
Now, James, there's also some specific guidance going back to 2005 that does urge school leaders to keep Catholic schools accessible, available, and affordable to all who desire this high-quality form of education. And I know that between all these stakeholders, between the state of Florida and these scholarship programs and the communities that you mentioned who do provide the funding to these schools, this is really a significant effort, and I think that these scholarship programs really are assisting in meeting that goal of making our schools accessible, available, and affordable to all who desire to send their children to these schools. A lot of great work there.
Yes, that's for sure. That 2005 guidance was really taken to heart by our school leaders and has really served our system of Catholic schools well in Florida and throughout the nation.
James, we've said a bit about what's happening related to some of the priorities around K through 12 education, but ministries of the church are also involved in dealing with early learners, like children in pre-kindergarten. And so what are some of the key discussions among policy leaders here in Florida that relate to these younger learners?
In Florida, we have a very popular program called Voluntary Pre-Kindergarten Education, or VPK for short. This program was launched by the state back in 2005, and it's free to Florida parents who choose it for a child who turns 4 by September 1st of a given school year. Parents could also opt to wait and have their child take the program at age 5 instead of age 4. Now, there's a lot of research about the importance of early childhood education and how the human brain undergoes most of its development by age 5. So those are very crucial years for learning and laying a foundation for a child's later academic success. In Florida, we have 134 Catholic schools participating in this state scholarship. So this during the current school year, VPK is serving 3,810 Catholic school students, or 5% of our total statewide enrollment. For the first time in 6 years, the legislature approved an increase for VPK. The per-child scholarships received a 2% boost. This means that the per child amounts will increase by $49. So they'll be set at $2,486 in the 2020-2021 school year.
Well, the funding piece is certainly important to ensure the ongoing quality of this early learning program through VPK, James, but I know that the legislature has also been working the last couple of years to make some significant improvements to this program and others, particularly as it pertains to ensuring the quality of the providers and the programs that are being offered. Would you like to say a little bit more about the leadership of those efforts and where they're trying to go?
Yes, I sure would. And the funding piece is important because it allows providers to retain the kind of high-quality teachers that they want, who really have a strong desire to work with our youngest learners and experience in that realm. But the legislature has been really looking at the program, and it hasn't had a major overhaul since it was established. So they've been working on, in two consecutive years, to figure out how to overhaul the program and make it stronger for the children served, and really crack down on the problem of certain providers who merely warehouse children or maybe provide a form of glorified babysitting instead of really educating the children.
Now, one of the legislators who sort of spearheaded these efforts is State Representative Erin Grawl. She's herself a product of Catholic elementary and secondary school education. And what are some of the things that are being contemplated to improve the VPK program, James?
Yes, Representative Grawl out of Vero Beach has been a true champion on this issue of looking at the quality of the education for our youngest learners, and making sure they get off to a solid start of their academic journeys. And one interesting thing is that Representative Grawl herself is a product of a Catholic elementary and secondary school education. And she and her parents are also very active participants and regular participants in an annual advocacy event that the Florida Conference of Catholic Bishops has called Catholic Days at the Capitol. But Representative Grawl, one of the key things that she wanted us to look at is how do we assess children in the VPK program to make sure they're making adequate learning gains? And how do we look at that under a reasonable timeline, so that those learning gains are considered, and also it's tied in to the quality measure for providers in the program?
Well, James, I know we've covered a lot of good ground here around early learning and what happened last session, where things are going to go in the coming session. Is there anything else you want to add on that topic, particularly as we look to the coming year?
Yes, there's one piece of the early learning equation that I would like to mention. And basically, it comes down to the credentials for directors of these VPK centers. And we have public schools that offer VPK, and we also have Catholic and other non-public schools that offer VPK. So when you look at the credentials for VPK directors in non-public schools, there are many cases in which these directors have certification by the Florida Department of Education, but the current law doesn't recognize that they have this certification, and it requires them to also have certification by another agency, the Department of Children and Families. So they're required to take additional training hours, and many providers find that burdensome. So we're hoping to look for a way to find a better path forward and maybe eliminate some duplicative credentials under the system and make a more equitable system so it's uniform between non-public and public school providers of VPK.
Well, James, as we look to the future as well, obviously we've seen a lot of changes related to the pandemic. Schools have gone remote and virtual. Early learning programs have really been limited in terms of just finding staff and families who are willing to place their children there. It does seem that as we go forward, there will be a lot of additional factors for the legislature and policymakers to consider. Hopefully we can continue to make the good ground that you and so many stakeholders have made the way for this last session and in preceding sessions, and that we're going to want to preserve enrollment in our schools so as not to overwhelm the public school system as folks maybe face additional financial hardships. I think these scholarships are going to go a long way. Are there any other things that you think we should be, you'd like to just offer as we look to the future and to continue to build on the excellent work of the conference and trying to promote a strong system of schools here in Florida?
Yes, I think it's important to look at the system of education in Florida as a whole and look at how to benefit the common good of all school children as we make these decisions. The conference advocates for a strong system of education for all school children in Florida, whether in public or non-public schools. But we also recognize that Catholic and other non-public schools provide a significant savings to the state of Florida, and there have been different research studies which support that. And so we want the state to look at these things as they consider the fiscal impacts of COVID-19 and consider how to help families who have lost jobs or income due to the pandemic to be able to make ends meet next school year and going forward.
Well, James, thanks for providing this outstanding overview to the last session and this outlook on the coming session, and for all your wonderful service here at the conference. Many thanks. God bless you and yours. God bless the state of Florida, and especially through our Catholic schools and our advocacy for all school children in Florida.
Thank you, Michael, and it's been a pleasure again to be on here. I really appreciate it.